second chapter clicked in to College Volleyball Weekly on Viral Volley Media. Now here's your host, Rob on mic.
All right, good day, everyone. Welcome to episode 11 of the 2024 Men's Championship Volleyball Top 20, featuring Brad Rossner of UC San Diego, Theo Edwards of CSUN, Jay Hossick of George Mason, and I think Dan Friend of Lewis is either in his Uber, chauffeur, driver, limo, party van on the way back from the airport from Chicago, coming back from the Outrigger Invitational. But
I thought he was flying the plane.
Yeah, cool pilot guy. Come on now.
That's right. He is flying the plane because he is a cool pilot guy. But man, it's describing the action in week 11 is going to be tough because there's a roller coaster ride of what happened through the week. But let's start with our favorite segment for everyone but me this week, the elephant in the room. And we'll go from bottom left, my bottom left, all the way around to every other coach. And that would be Jay Hossick of George Mason. How's your week like, Jay?
Well, we played NJIT on Friday night. They're a team that in the past couple of years has had our number. And when we went up to them earlier this year, we lost the first game pretty handily. It had been the first match we played in 2.5 weeks. And, you know, I liked how we responded after that first set and took them in four. And we knew they were going to come in hot in kind of this similar situation. We came out a little bit flat in the first game and they came out hot and took it to us. And then, you know, we came back and beat them again in four, which put us at third in the rankings in the EIBA and the standings, I mean. And, you know, we felt good about that. The next night, Fairleigh Dickinson came in and, you know, I think Carl has done a pretty nice job of keeping that program in the forefront, you know, in terms of in the NEC and taking his team to new heights. They came in and we made a couple of, you know, unforced errors at unkey moments. And we lost the first game 23-25, but again, responded, I thought, pretty well and took the next three pretty handily. And so we went 2-0 on the weekend and that felt good. And, you know, being above 500 is good. And it's good momentum coming into this week. We have Mount Olive coming in twice. They're a good team. They've beaten some good programs along the way and they got a couple of key players that are helping them out. But, you know, it's now a time where we're back into a couple of weeks of non-conference where we get a chance to, you know, kind of rest and rehab and get some guys healthy. We're on the injury train, just like everybody else. Had another kid go down on Saturday. So we're without five starters right now. And that's a little bit tough, but, you know, we'll see what we can do this weekend and be able to pull out a couple more wins. But yeah, I like what I see in my guys right now. We're responding well, and that's what matters to us.
Excellent. Well, at least you're not having to resort to, you know, Craigslist again, like you were in recent years. So I guess that's a win for you and the Patriots, huh?
Yeah, we're sponsored by Duct Tape right now. So it's a good NIL deal if you can get it.
Yep. Let's jump over to Brad Rossner of UC San Diego.
Well, National Athletic Trainer Month, so it's a good month to be injured. we had University of St. Catharines, which is a local school, local NAI program out here. They're just north in San Marcos. And originally this match or this prior week, we were supposed to play a team from the East Coast, but their budget didn't allow for it this year. And timing worked out where Sherry Cluett, who's the head coach at St. Catharines, she's a really, really well-respected high school coach at San Marcos High and has coached a couple, one current Trident and a couple former Tridents as well, to where we were able to set up this match and kind of plug it in. And it was great experience for them and great for us. We got to play a couple different lineups, try some things out and get to experiment. And then, things have been pretty good. We went 10 straight days of volleyball. So it was nice to have a couple off days this week and be able to prepare for what's going to be a grind of a week with Harvard. And then we got two with Theo.
The CVW Bowl happens this week. Let's jump over to Theo of CSUN.
Yeah, we had a good week. Started off with Penn State early on a Tuesday. And, you know, we actually had a really slow start to that match. Penn State came out and I thought was a little bit slow, a little slower than they've been, and not playing what I would say their best ball that they played this year. But we were even slower and we gave them a bunch of errors, especially in the first two sets, and kind of struggled to recover through that. And then for the back two sets, we played incredibly well, handled them in the third set, and in the fourth set kind of could have been anyone's game. And Penn State ended up sneaking it out, and tip my hat to them. I thought they did a really great job, and but it was a tale of errors for us. The back half of this week, we ended up doing an inter-squad scrimmage and made that open to the public. Was a really great event, and something that we have not done before on the books. And it was awesome. I got to play a ton of guys and got to have kind of an environment for the guys that haven't played this year. That felt very game-like, even though it wasn't necessarily a true match, and got to play in front of some fans and just had a really great event. So it was a lot of fun. Good week.
Yeah. Do you invite alumni over to your, to this open gym? I hadn't seen it, but usually.
Yeah, we actually did not. This kind of came out a little bit last minute. But the plan is to kind of grow it, after seeing kind of what it could be and kind of how fun it was, especially for the guys that, you know, at this point in the season, and I know that there's a lot of programs that go through this, but there's few and far opportunities sometimes for that second and third guy in a position to have an opportunity to see the floor and get some quality minutes and something that's different than the practice reps and some of that stuff. And it was awesome for their families too. A lot of families showed up and were able to come and see the guys compete. And but yeah, I think the plan is to eventually expand it and allow the alumni to be there and all that good stuff.
Well, look who jumps in flying the plane in from Hawaii. That would be Lewis coach, head coach, Dan Friend. And of course, his timing is immaculate because we're in the elephant in the room. I was kind of hoping to skip it, but we got to do it because Dan is here now.
What elephant is that, Rob? Did I beat your team? Is that what we're going to talk about?
Hey, that makes two of us on here that did so far this year. That's pretty good.
I feel pretty good.
And that actually means this group is undefeated against that team so far.
Oh, my God.
Hey, just to throw another one out, I'm undefeated against all of you guys on this screen, just so you guys know.
And the salt is thrown heavy and in large quantities.
Can you go back to that fight, Dan?
Well, Dan, it's your opportunity to talk about your guys because they did have a great weekend. At least, I mean, the record doesn't show up, but they played awesome. And I'm going to shout out to, Max Rocky's dad, Rick Rocky, who Facebook Live all the the Lewis matches where Hawaii was involved. So it was cool to be able to have two more matches to watch.
Well, I think Rick does a great job, and we're fortunate to have him part of us traveling right now. And so it was great to have him kind of screen that and go. But what a great tournament. I thought it was really, really good and saw a lot of high level volleyball. I mean, we didn't probably show up against Hawaii the first night in terms of that. But I thought outside of that, I thought our guys did a nice job competing against Irvine and competing against Grand Canyon. And I mean, really unfortunate. I mean, Irvine had a great match last night against Hawaii, and hopefully he's okay. Chalkas, you saw that kind of go down at the end and everything. And so, because he's such a phenomenal athlete and probably one of the best in the NCAA to watch in terms of playing. And so, but yeah, really, really great high level volleyball. It was fun to be a part of and proud of the guys and the way they competed. So
we'll get more in detail the Outrigger in Hawaii, but I definitely wanted to say prayers, positive thoughts to Spiros Hakas of Hawaii. Had a great tournament, was the most outstanding player of the tournament. Went down late in the fifth set. We're talking 13-13. And being one who's gone through that injury myself, I did not want to have to see that replay on the broadcast. But, I mean, I know they have to do it, but I just hope that it isn't anything too serious and that he can get back on the court. So, Spiros, we're pulling for you. I know you listen in and message and all that stuff. So I know you already posted on social this morning. which I think is awesome. But he's like, I'll be back. But, you know, we'll see what happens the end of this week here, because I think they're going to get more information. So with that, let's jump into our Week 10 recap. I'm going to start with the Pac-12 Big Ten Classic featuring UCLA, USC, Penn State, and Ohio State. We'll let you guys take a stab at whatever match you want to jump into right off the bat, because that was a bunch of matches here in LA going on between ninth-ranked Penn State, number 12 USC, number 4 UCLA, and number 6 Ohio State. So anything grab your attention in any of those matches in the that Classic?
I thought, to me, the most intriguing was UCLA avenging the loss out the first point challenge in Texas and getting Ohio State back pretty handily. The sets were close, but sweeping a team like Ohio State and really kind of making that statement of like, okay, yep, you've got us in five, but we're going to bounce back and take it. And I think it could be a sign of UCLA starting to hit their stride. They've obviously been more than battle tested. And they're plenty talented, obviously, but I thought that was probably the biggest statement out of all those matchups was seeing that big win responding to what it was like at the end of January.
Yeah, I think Ethan Chample that night hit 444, the Libro to outside, back to Libro to outside again, stepping up. And you got to love what he's doing. You know, Coach Spross saying, okay, I need you here. And he's stepping in, doing it in two positions. So great nights of volleyball. Grant Sloan chipped in on that night against Ohio State, 8 kills, an ace, and digging a block and rowing 23 assists. But I was really shocked that first night. Not shocked, but Penn State came in after playing Theo up at Northridge and took UCLA to 5. I thought they looked a little tired or off rhythm against CSUN that night, but they came in and put up a fight. Want to comment on that, Theo?
Yeah, I actually was just as surprised. I didn't think they were playing all that great against us. And like I said, kind of earlier in the series, but we ended up giving that match away in a lot of ways. We made a ton of errors and kind of allowed them to squeak that one out. But, you know, it shows a testament to how good that team is and how talented they are. That battle against UCLA, I didn't get a chance to watch all of it. But, it looked like an absolute dogfight. And Ethan Champlin hit 500. It still was a five-setter. It was some really, really great volleyball, obviously, being played. And Cooper Robinson had 11 kills, hit 450 as well. So, I mean, it wasn't like UCLA played poorly. They obviously had some guys that did some damage and played really well. Penn State's just a great team. And, I think we all – as the coaches have kind of pointed out on this podcast many, many times, you just don't know where a team's at, right? And every week things can be very different based on injuries, based on fatigue. This trip that Penn State took out here was really long. And they were out here for almost, you know, the better half of a week and a half. So you're away from family, you're away from, you know, your comforts, your creature comforts, you're in multiple different hotel rooms. It's a tough place to be, and especially to find your rhythm from a volleyball perspective. But I thought they played incredibly well, even though they only, you know, they were only able to pull out one match while they were on this road trip.
Yeah. Anything else to add, gentlemen, on the any matches of the Pac-12 Big Ten Classic?
Yeah, I think we're starting to see fatigue start to set in. I don't think it was necessarily just with that grouping. I think you're starting to see across the board every team has their starters, and it's a matter of how deep your bench is and can you give guys some rest. And I think you're starting to see teams like UCLA, teams like Long Beach starting to be able to remain high level regardless, because they have some guys that they can mix up in the lineups. And, you know, you look at Grand Canyon, you've been playing basically the same 6 or 7 guys the entire year. And you know, no slam against Hawaii or Lewis or anybody else. But, you know, if they're a little bit weary. And Penn State, Theo hit on the head. They looked a little bit road tired on the first night and, you know, figured it out the last night against UCLA. But, you know, it's we're all one injury away. And some of us, unfortunately, you know, 4 or 5 injuries deep, but we're all one injury away from the next guy up. And it'll be interesting to see. Hopefully nobody's injured. It's just more from tire than anything else. It'll be interesting to see how we go down the line and how people still hold up after another 2, 3, 4 weeks of playing by the time tournament time gets here.
Yeah.
Rob, I just add in, I think the at-large implications, Brad said it, but UCLA avenging that loss, I think that could pay dividends down the road when we get into kind of, does UCLA win the MPSF or they do not? And then where do they sit at compared to a couple of the other schools? So
what makes that GCU-UCLA matchup in conference play an important one to watch? But yeah, it looks like they, this is kind of a weird time because it's spring break for some and they're using this time to travel. And as coaches, you have to do this load management thing just to make sure your guys are healthy for trips, like for when you come west or when what teams west go east. But I mean, that's got to be a pretty big challenge because you don't want to lose any matches if you don't have to, but you want to be able to manage your guys so they can make the push for the rest of the conference play. And hopefully, you know, God willing, that you don't get any injuries on the trip. So it super challenging, I'm sure.
Yeah, it's all of us on here look at our schedule, look at our health, you know, gauge and kind of figure out what's going to be best. And, you know, the coaches that can input a couple new guys and give some starters some rest at this time of the year when the dog days of season are upon us, is going to fare a little bit better going down the line. But, yeah, it's tough.
Yeah. Let's go over to number 8 Stanford and number 8 BYU. Correction, I got it wrong. Number 8 Stanford at number 7 BYU. I guess I was really tired typing up the thing last night. But thoughts on that matchup? Bounce back match. BYU takes night 1. Stanford takes night 2. Is that what we expected as a result? A split with the two teams there? Because Stanford's been pretty good, but BYU's been, you know, they're kind of rising up. So let's jump into the conversation. Who's in?
Yeah, I'll start because I'll be quick. For me, the difference was Capone Brown. On first night, he hit 388, and on the second night, he hit -150. And when you're playing two top-quality teams, sometimes your go-to guy or somebody you can rely upon, if they're not having a great night, now you're putting pressure on everybody else. But, you know, two great teams battling it out, and that's a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah.
We saw earlier in the year, right, Stanford had been bouncing around with some different lineups. But they're so deep and they have a ton of seniors, right? Night 2, Kevin Lamp comes back in the lineup, who the prior week was not involved in the roster perspective, and comes in, has 9 kills, hits 421, has 2 aces. He has an electric serve. And so, you know, Jay kind of hit on this. Some of these teams that have the ability and the depth where you can bring in a guy like that who can have a major impact and has a ton of experience, I mean, it really pays dividends. And so, you know, I think those two teams are really close in comparison in terms of a skill perspective, and to have a bounce back opportunity where maybe you can make a lineup change, or maybe it's a lineup change from the week prior and have the skill and the depth to do so, it really paid off for Stanford.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think from BYU side is that's a, you know, getting that split was probably well fought and almost a win for them, that the fact they were able to get one at Stanford and in terms of the MPSF standings and how that's going to shake out by the end of the year with their home court advantage. The fact that they're able to get one there is huge around a team that I say those two teams are probably pretty evenly matched for third or fourth in that conference. So I think it's huge. And I think for Stanford, Nathaniel Gates has been playing really, really well all year long in the middle. And he's been hammering balls. He had another good weekend. And then Meeks Ramanis is starting to really find his stride on the left for BYU. And we've talked about him on the show a good bit, but I think he's really kind of finding that rhythm and finding that stride as we're getting to the second half of the season.
Well, the MPSF, Stanford sits in sixth place and every team is above 500 above Stanford. So, yeah, there's still a lot of good volleyball to be played in that conference. And, I mean, Stanford is good. As someone on the podcast pointed out, that they are 6 or 7 super seniors in, and they've got a deep well of talent to go to if they need to. So we'll see how they string out. And they've got Will Rotman back off injury, and they're going to be dialed in come postseason time.
Well, and it's, you want to talk about something strange. You got the MPSF, which is, you know, what, little close to midway through their conference. You got MEVA, which has been rolling in conference. EIVA is rolling in conference. Northridge hasn't even played a conference match yet.
So he's undefeated and leads the Big West.
It's crazy. Absolutely crazy.
Oh, no, it's a great place to be.
Well,
hey, Rob, a different thing. This is, we talk about this later, but we're going to be missing some great teams in our national tournament, as we always talk about, because you're going to look at a BYU or a Stanford or another Big West team or even another MEVA team. And it'll be so great when this bracket finally gets to like 12 teams or so, because it's just going to be eight. We're going to be missing a few. So,
yeah. Well, by my count, four good teams are being left out of the tournament this year, if I were to go on today's results, you know, but that always changes. You never know. There's still what, four and a half weeks or so of play. So we'll see what happens from there. Let's jump over to our next matchup. And I'm going to save the outrigger for last, a detailed conversation on the outrigger, but I've got to go to a match that's gotten a lot of attention, and it's Long Beach State Santa Barbara series. Some great volleyball being played. Long Beach State took night one in Long Beach 3-1. And then the next night in Santa Barbara, a 5-set thriller with excellent play. And obviously the big topic, of course, rather than the play, has become the extracurricular activities that were happening during the match and a little bit after the match. But let's talk about the volleyball, and then we can address that whole thing, because you know, I'm not going to talk about this recklessly. I've spoken to some people that I trust on that saw everything, were there. So we'll go from there and what you guys know. So any thoughts on that Long Beach State UC Santa Barbara series? Ooh, hesitancy.
I'll start only because I want to give this kid some credit. Jesse Bianchi, it should be a first-team All-American candidate by the end of the year. The kid's taking a ton of swings. He's keeping them, in the conversation during matches. I don't think enough credit is being given to him outside of the Santa Barbara realm. You know, he's going in there night after night after night, taking a ton of swings. There's a couple of guys throughout the country that are leading their team in attempts, but also leading their team, you know, in kills. And Justy's that kid. So good for him. I know it sucked on match point that he got stuffed and you know, he felt badly, but he was the right guy to make the set. This is why we all in our gyms do a drill called you to man. And everybody who doesn't understand that drill, everyone in the gym knows that guy is going to get it and we got to go stop him. And he's been really, really tough. He's like trying to catch a jellyfish, you know, it's tough to get. So kudos to him, and just want to give him a little props. He's had a good season so far, and hopefully he can keep it up throughout the rest of the year.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah, I think I'll add to that. There was a point in time where Santa Barbara, for whatever reason, I mean, and probably because they have a lot of talent, but Bianchi was out of the lineup, right? And they had Barnett in there, right? Who has struggled to be healthy most of his career. And so, you know, the wonder is, if Bianchi was maybe hurt or something was going on, if he's in the lineup exclusively, like kind of where is Santa Barbara at this point? Because he has definitely been a guy that they can ride. They can get on his back and he says, hey, I'll carry you guys to the top. We watched it in the first week against George Mason. We watched it. We watched that team do some really, really explosive things. And Jess Bianchi is the reason, not just part of the reason. He's the reason. But, you know, I'll touch really quickly on kind of the end of the match. And, you know, we were talking about it last week, so it almost came at the perfect moment. A little bit of moxie, a little bit of, as Jay likes to say, a little moxie. But there was a lot of chirping going on in this match. And, you know, I think for all of the, you know, the coaches, for the players that play this game at a really high level, I mean, the difference between these talented players is very small in a lot of ways. A lot of these guys are really capable of playing some really, really high level volleyball. And there's a lot of emotion that goes into it. And what we saw at the end of that match was just a culmination of all of these guys, coaches included, they want to win. And it's important to them, and it's important to them to back each other up when some guys get stared down or some trash gets talked. And you know, sometimes I think things get carried away, but that's a part of sports, right? We see it all over the place. I think that this was nothing more than just some emotions kind of boiling over. I don't think it was anything personal. I think the world of both those programs, both those coaching staffs, but it's always fun to get an opportunity like this to talk about our game. You know, even whether it's good or bad, it's still good press to a certain extent. And it's exciting to see, and the emotions are high, and we're now rounding the corner of March and coming down the stretch where these wins are really, really important. And when you see the Big West competitions, we all know one or two games might be the difference in terms of your placement, your standing for the tournament. And so a lot of nerves, a lot of emotions, but most of all, some really exciting volleyball. And it's a bummer to see what happened at the end, but I understand it wholly.
Yeah.
I might add in, I think Skylar Varga and Sapanis were pretty good. Varga had, 19 kills both matches, and, you know, certainly and some impressive numbers by those guys in terms of putting Long Beach in a position to win both those matches. My piece with the, I mean, ultimately both nights were chippy. If you were paying attention to the first night to the second night, and it all kind of boiled over, but there is a little bit. So we put these lines at the end of the bench that were instituted by the NCAA, and how well those are being enforced becomes on the officials. And I'm not saying the officials could have stopped anything towards the end, but they maybe could have done a little bit better job of making sure they're enforcing some that's already laid out for them to enforce. And I'd have to see the whole video, and I wasn't there on that particular piece. But outside of that, I agree with Theo, but if you control that a little bit more, maybe some of those don't happen. Do you know what I mean? Maybe a guy doesn't run straight by you at the end of the match taunting, and you're saying, hey, young man, you don't have to do that. If we're a little bit more aware and how to control some of those situations. So,
yeah. Well, you know, interesting you bring that up, because I worked a duel yesterday, which I saw some really seasoned, and by that I mean old, longtime experience referees who happen to be working the event I was at, who work a lot of indoor in the Big West. And they said that the first thing they asked was, who was the R1? and they basically just said they needed to control that through the match, which I thought was an interesting take coming from a referee who's been in the game that long. And each of the referees that were around him agreed that they needed to control that early, because if it gets too out of hand, you get some overreactions towards the end. And, you know, hence, you know, the escalated emotions, we'll just say.
And I'm not normally a ref defender, but
Theo, come on.
I will say this. Tony Chan, who was the R2, you can see at the end of the match, first of all, most of the times those teams come together and then they're going to shake hands at the net. So to play kind of devil's advocate, those teams are going to approach the net irregardless, right? Regardless, right? It depends on who we're talking to from the grammar specialist.
We're Jay. Informal, so irregardless works.
So
well, Jay so, must have forgot his tuxedo at home.
So to their defense, those teams are going to be approaching the net and leaving the bench lines and all of those other things. Tony Chan immediately realizes, hey, this is past the normal emotions. You guys aren't shaking hands, and shuts that down. I think the mistake that for sure was witnessed is there was a player that went on to the other side of the net, went around the ref stand and went to the other side. And I think the R1 might've missed that. And that might have helped de-escalate the situation if you at least keep the teams on their side. But yeah, I thought Tony Chan did a good job of trying to at least make sure they didn't shake hands and keep them on their own side of the net.
Well, I'm going to play Colonel Clink from Hogan's Heroes. I'm probably the only guy that knows that reference.
Circa 1960 for all you kids that want to go look it up on YouTube in 4-3 ratio.
That's right. And if you watch it, you'll see Colonel Clink always go, I know nothing. So I don't know specifics. I will just comment on what I saw. Chirpiness happens. And I think these two teams have a little history. I think some of the players have a little history. And if you watch both matches, like Dan said, there definitely was no shortage of stare downs through the net and a little bit of moxie here and there. Nothing wrong with any of that stuff. I think Dan or Theo touched upon it. You know, we have lines now that we have to put down. And, you know, I think if you look at how they're structured, they're kind of rectangular. And so the guys that are in the back sometimes will maybe make a step out, so it angles out a little bit, but really nothing in front of it should be held or should be had. And I think there was a player or two that were clearly in front of that. And I think there was some issue, and rightfully so, I think, with why that player is being allowed to stand there. Secondly, you know, as the match wears on, I like to call some referees the fun police. And what do I mean by that? Is when there's a big long rally or there's a really hotly contested point or there's, you know, a big stuff or a big kill at a key moment, you know, there's going to be a little moxie there. And there's nothing wrong with that. I think every coach will admit that, you know, that should be allowed to be had. You watch any sport around the country, basketball, football, yeah, there's going to be some of that there. I mean, we just saw LSU and South Carolina women's basketball. Emotions got the best of them. And there was a fight on the court between two women's basketball teams. That's how much it's permeated into the ethos, if you will. But you watch the match happen, and clearly it got out of control, and those referees may or may not have done the correct thing at the wrong time or vice versa. And then you watch the player, I think Theo nailed it, the player that ran on the other side. When you watch the end of the match and after the hullabaloo between the coaches and everybody's out of the gym, that player went back to shake the hands of the referees, and Ray Mink, who is the R1, shook his hand. And as the kid walked by, he pulled him back and told him something. I don't know what was said, but I would almost guarantee it was something along the lines of, you shouldn't cross the net like that and taunt players. That's not acceptable. But that's the wrong time to make that statement, because that already had happened. And unfortunately, things escalated and got out of control. But you know, the sad part for me is that we're all friends on the men's side for the most part. I mean, I've had dinner and drinks with every guy on this screen numerous times. Guys have stayed at my house. You know, Dan's brought his family and spent a few days with us. You know, these are all people that I consider my colleagues. And yeah, there's some moments where I may not be happy with certain things. There's an example of Dan and I was in his gym a number of years ago and was not happy about something. But Dan and I can walk up to each other and have a conversation. And in the end of it all, he's still my friend. And I think it's sad now that we have this, you know, kind of tit for tat thing. And we got two guys that are butting heads, and whether or not they're friends or not, I don't know. But it just sucks when it's maybe somebody that you know pretty well and it's gotten out of control like that. So I guarantee you this, two things are going to happen. One, I guarantee both coaches are going to talk to their teams about that incident. I don't know if they're going to go, love it, don't love it. I don't know. Maybe one will, maybe one won't. But I'll tell you the other thing that's going to happen. There was probably a massive email string or conference call amongst all national referees. And moving forward, if you sneeze in the wrong direction, I guarantee you some referee is going to give you a little headache about it. So it's going to come. It's the pendulum's going to swing the complete opposite side, I bet, in the next coming weeks.
Yeah.
Hey, Theo, I do think the Big West has the largest group of coaches who get angry with each other. Is that a good way to put it?
I don't think yeah. That's an accurate statement. I think there's some accuracy there. But I also think that, you know, there's a reason for that, right? Like, there, a lot of these coaches have been in this conference for a long time, and the competition is incredibly tough. And I think that that leads to some animosity for sure.
Well, there's only six coaches in the Big West, dude. And two of them are right here.
One, two.
Theo would win the fight, right?
I think one thing that really stood out to me like, first the volleyball. Long Beach has been pretty darn consistent all year long, and they weren't so clean night two up at Rob Gym. So I think, you know, what kind of adds into all this is Santa Barbara had a great chance to, you know, get another upset, steal a huge conference win against the top team in the Big West. And what, I think they're ranked two. So, like, that's another huge win for them, for conference standings and just for their program. And I think they sense that, right? The Santa Barbara, they have high volleyball IQ. They know what's going on, and they sense that. And the interesting piece statistically, both teams were around like 250 in first ball, but hitting way higher in transition, which is never normally the case, right? Jess Bianchi was like hitting 250 in first ball and 400 in transition, which is really hard to do as an opposite when you're seeing a ton of balls and a ton of swings. So I think that kind of adds some fuel to the fire. Is that might have been viewed as a missed opportunity at that time to pull that upset and really get a huge conference series split between Santa Barbara and Long Beach, you know. And I think ultimately the Long Beach people are going to think the Santa Barbara people did wrong. The Santa Barbara people are going to think the Long Beach people did wrong. And the reality is we have players from all over the world competing for something they really care about. Right. And yeah, could things have been different? Of course. But ultimately, they care about their teammates. They care about coming out on top in that moment. And it was an action-filled and really, really intense match. So those situations are going to come up, and like, there's no perfect way to handle it, right? There's no, you know, we don't get the Big West coach's handbook. And it's like, hey, when this situation comes up with this coach or in this gym, here's how you need to manage it. It's you're just figuring it out on the fly, you know. And for us who've been doing it less, or, you know, guys like Alan and Rick who are doing it, been doing it a lot longer, they're going to be okay. I'm sure they're going to talk at some point, and they're going to be just fine. You're going to see them recruiting. They're going to be just fine. They'll be at the Big West Conference Tournament. They're just going to be fine. You know, it's not a ton changes.
Yeah. Some good points there, Brad. It's, yeah, because these coaches have been competing for a long time. And especially in that culture at Santa Barbara at Rob Gym. I mean, I haven't been there when it's been full, but it was pretty full that night. And the people I spoke to, they said everyone is getting into the chirping. Parents, students, the facility staff, which I think is hilarious. But it was tight, and it was high quality, high action volleyball. And the emotions were high. It makes it so exciting to be in that kind of environment. So it doesn't surprise me that you know, emotions kind of got thrown out there. But in the end, I think the seasoned referee that I referred to, he goes, yeah, we're all buds, sets 1 through 3. 4, it starts getting a little more tense. And 5, I hate you until we're done with this match. So that's just the nature of competition.
Was that an exact quote there with the I hate you? Or?
Well, I had to keep it family
paraphrasing.
Because there are some expletives in there that I had to kind of edit out here. So,
yeah, we went 5 with Dan. I can absolutely attest to that statement.
I didn't get to go 5 with Dan, so I never got past the that I love you still face. It was always love.
Well, when Jay beat us in 5, I didn't like him either.
Hey, I don't like Matt Worley today, so how about that? He beat me in 5, so. Sorry, Matt. Sorry about that.
Well, again, that's just what match 3 or 3 and 4 of Big West play. And Santa Barbara has a 4, like Brad has, 3 or 4 already? Because you're 3. So, and we're still waiting for, you know, the undefeated Matadors to get on the board there. So we'll see as things go on through the rest of the season, but it's going to be hotly contested. We actually, Santa Barbara and UC Irvine play this week. So I got them Wednesday and Friday night. Let's go to the Outrigger, which was highly anticipated. And we'll let Dan celebrate his, but I'm going to like claim my fame right now because UC Irvine came out big in match number 1 against Grand Canyon. 3-2 win. Ilir Hanno, what can you say about him? You know, it's just he took charge, and Will Darcy stepped in, double-digit kills to assist in the effort. But, man, I never thought that we'd be able to out-hit GCU because of the firepower they've got, but they ended up doing it. And high thriller. I actually, funny story, I'm working another game. I see the live stats since that one wasn't broadcast. Irvine loses 3-1. I'm like, having a tussy fit. Turned it off. At the end of the game I was working, the athletic director of Irvine comes up to me, quite a match, huh? I'm like, a 3-1 loss is quite a match? She goes, no, there is a video challenge by NIF that pushed it where Irvine won 29-27 in that fourth set. And they ended up, or I'm sorry, in the fourth set, and ended up turning it big time in the fifth, winning 15-6. So, it was a high emotion night for me when I saw the result. But, I mean, in the end, I wish I could have seen the ball, the play that was happening, because, you know, they were pretty much, I thought they were on the ropes and done after that fourth set. But any thoughts on that first matchup of the Outrigger?
Well, I'm just going to talk about all of them. Because the Outrigger itself is an event. First of all, I don't care if anybody else picks him. I'm still going to pick him. Hilaire Hanno is my player of the week nationally, regionally, overseasally. I don't care how you look at it.
Overseasally.
Yeah, overseas. Overseasally.
Regardless of that word, I agree with that pick.
I'm absolutely going to say that is not a real word, but I'm making it a word because that's what it was. The kid took 175 swings in three matches. Let that sink in for a second.
He sets half of them.
Against Grand Canyon, he had 64 attempts and 29 kills, hit 406. Against Lewis, he had 43 attempts, 24 kills, hit 419. And against Hawaii, he had 68 attempts, 36 kills, and hit 529. The kid had 175 swings, and he hit 451 for the tournament. That is unbelievable. The next highest guy against Hawaii that had attempts was Tangatur, who had 26. It's less than half. And then they still went five and only lost by a couple in the fifth. And I got to give Niff some credit here and his players. They went into this match, and we're all thinking Darcy's going to be the opposite. Maybe we might see Flexing come back out on the right side. Who knows? You know, everybody knows about Hilaire and Tangatur and Setter. They ran a 6-2 with Joe Carlos and Shuey both hitting on the right side. So they shrank the court 15 feet, basically, for 90% of the match and still went five with Hawaii, who was basically at full strength. That is unbelievable. And they were running Hanno all over the place. So I think Chris McLaughlin at one point goes, he's had 20 kills and he has not hit the same ball twice in a row. It's unbelievable to watch this guy. And I know he didn't have a great night from the service line, but regardless, Niff ran old school volleyball. It reminded me of I think all of us on the screen will attest to it. When you're watching that one random club team that's not really that good, but you have a kid that you want to watch, he's on the team, and you go to his court, it's way off in the distance. It might be in the parking lot for all you know. And it's two teams that probably aren't really that good, but there's that one guy on each team, and all it is a chuck fest. They're just give it to this kid, give it to this kid. And that's what they basically did. And no slam against the rest of the players on Irvine. They're all good. They're fine players. But holy smokes, man. And there was a couple moments that Carlos had everybody in front of him. And he chipped one back at Shuey. He had nobody in front of him a few swings. He just kind of puts it down in the middle of the court and goes, yeah, whatever, I'm moving on. Because nobody paid attention to him. And not rightfully so, but rightfully so. I mean, this is the guy who's getting all the sets. We got to stop that guy. But congratulations to Hawaii winning the Outrigger. It's a hardly fought match. And, you know, sucks that Spiros went down so late in game five. The match is almost over. He had a phenomenal tournament. Hawaii has a couple of pieces that are in the wings that are ridiculous. They have a French kid who's a true freshman who is absolutely, yeah, stupid. The kid is stupid good. But, you know, it just goes to prove that, you know, these are some of the top teams that were out there this week. And we saw some really, really good matches and some good play by all the teams involved. You know, Dan beating UCI, that's a big deal.
Oh,
you know, and listen, Dan, you could throw me $20 later. But that's how the Outrigger used to be back in the day. And it's fun to see that it came back this year. I enjoyed watching all the matches that I could when I wasn't coaching myself. But man, hats off to Heno. That kid's, he should be sponsored by duct tape, if you ask me.
Just one thing before I let the other coaches go, because I got this stat late from the SID of Irvine last night. Stacey King, good shout out there to her. Heno set an NCAA record for points during the rally score era. One short, he had 40 points on his own. So pretty phenomenal. But
he has 687 attempts on the season. The next highest guy is at 389. Holy shnikes, everybody.
All right, other panel members on the Outrigger. Dan, you can jump in now. Yeah, my boy Max took care of Irvine in five after they beat. Go ahead. But I will say, Nico Paula. Oh, did he mute himself? Dan, I think you muted yourself. Or it wasn't meant to be.
Ah, can you hear me?
Yeah.
So I was going to say, let's talk about Grand Canyon a little bit. I think we saw them walk in the first night and certainly got handed a tough loss. But I watched that game, and it was a battle back and forth. A little bit of serve-receive, serving breakdown at certain times. And Heno certainly is the man. And you saw Irvine really capitalize out of the middle on some things towards that fifth game, which was pretty good to see from that standpoint. And then ultimately Hawaii took care of us, but then Hawaii and Grand Canyon played. So you're curious to see how does Grand Canyon kind of bounce back. And ultimately I think Hawaii took care of business there. And then Grand Canyon and us played, we jumped on them early, but then you saw Worley do a couple of substitutions and those guys responded for them and really hit pretty good against us the last three games. They were hitting above 500 with two hitting errors and really kind of flipped the match on us. And so Grand Canyon gets out of there with the win and, you know, maybe playing a couple new pieces. We saw Camden kind of get pulled and kind of a shift in a little bit of that from that standpoint. And so I think it'll be interesting to see, you know, where does Grand Canyon kind of respond next week. They're certainly super talented and have a great group of guys and do some really good things. And from that standpoint, but man, it was great. The fans were great. It was great to be a part of. And if you've never seen that or been a part of Hawaii volleyball, they just love great volleyball. And so when they see great volleyball, they're really just complimentary and everything. Got lots of compliments just walking through the stands after matches. And so that's always fun to be a part of.
Yeah, it was quite the show. And I feel like this year it wasn't nearly as, maybe it was because we had the Lewis Facebook stream, but it felt like last year it was like anarchy that we weren't able to watch the matches that Hawaii wasn't playing in and everyone was pissed off about it. To where this year, I think it was just a great showcase of four really, really strong, really, really competitive teams. Yeah, and Hawaii got the sweep on Grand Canyon, but I think overall the volleyball was pretty elite and pretty high level. And I think if, you know, the national tournament has quality volleyball like that, you know, whether it's those four teams and some other ones or, you know, whatever it ends up being, I think that's ultimately, you know, as a supporter and a promoter of men's volleyball, like that's ultimately what we want to see is teams playing at that level, players making plays in those moments and in those situations. Whether it's guys diving into the crowd, diving into over the scores table to blasting serves off people to, you know, extreme sportsmanship and, you know, and you saw it in 13-13 in the fifth set, you know, just the gravity of that situation when Shakas unfortunately goes down and obviously sending the best to him and his recovery. But you see Irvine notice it immediately, you know, and just ultimately, like I'd argue the two best players, maybe even in the nation, with Heno and Shakas going up against each other. And you see Heno, right when Shakas goes down, he kind of stops, walks towards him, tries to check on him, but gives him his space respectfully. And I think that was the story of the tournament to me was you had Heno and Shakas, two national player of the year contenders, and they were battling it out in a five set match in a great environment. And you know, obviously Hawaii ends up getting the best of that one, but you know, ultimately just really good volleyball players on all four teams, and really good volleyball, really good coaching. It was a joy to watch. It was a huge pleasure.
Yep. Theo.
Yeah, before I throw my take out there, I'm curious, what happened to Darcy against Dwight?
I just got a text saying that it was a last minute scratch before the match. Nothing else beyond that. So I'm not trying to keep it secret, but I was shocked because when they announced the starting lineup, like Carlos and Shuey in the lineup at the same time.
Well, and I mean the way that he had been playing, it was really surprising. I mean, I think the match that was probably his best, he hit over 500, had 11 digs, 2 block assists, 19 kills, 21 points. To have him and Hilaire Henao on the floor, I mean, it seems like a dual threat for sure. And, you know, we played against Darcy when he played really well in the Big West tournament last year. And I remember, you know, thinking at that point, man, this guy's going to have one heck of a career. I mean, he's just a big kid who hits a heavy ball and is really talented. So be interesting. I don't, you know, how does that match play out if he's involved in it? You know, hopefully he's not injured or, you know, whatever may have been happening with that. You know, a little bummed, a little disappointed to not have him in that match and see what that looks like. But to go back to the outrigger, I thought it was fantastic. Unlike Brad, I'm still disappointed in the viewership and how we are able to showcase that, because the truth of the matter is it's a mini NCAA tournament. I mean, we've got four really, really great teams battling in there, and to not have a platform that is TV, I mean, really, it should be on TV. And so I'll continue to put that in there and throw that out there and be angry until they fix that. So well, anyway, go ahead. You got something?
I was just going to say, there's an easy solution to all this. Hey, Volumetrics, charge $5 a match, give access to your cameras and all the gyms. You can make a little extra money, maybe pay for a little vacation at the end of the year. I guarantee you people will pay for it if it's not an already streamed match on ESPN Plus or anyone else.
Yeah, I think it'd be – honestly, Jay, if they did some adjustments and added microphones to the cameras, that would be a instant entertainment piece.
You have the ability to have remote announcers at every match. I mean, that's what Barnett and Sunderland did during the Olympics. They didn't fly there. And it happens all the time. So you can, you know, hire Don Shaw. You know, he loves talking volley. Hire a couple of the other coaches that maybe aren't coaching that night or wherever the case is. Let them work remotely. You don't have to show their faces. And then just charge money for people to watch the match and they can talk about it behind the end line. Pretty simple fix.
So listen, Huddle. Jay and I will take $5 for every match. But you got to make this happen. The volleyball was fantastic. And you know, I think, you know, Dan touched on this a little bit, but the ability to be able to watch teams absolutely get grinded and battle and then have to turn around the next night, and it's not getting any easier. You got to turn around and play another great team and a completely different scenario and a different system, and watching teams make those adjustments and continue to change as things went on was really, really cool and really, really fun to see. And yeah, I'm right there with all the rest of these guys. Hilaire Henao, wow. I mean, just absolutely incredible. And then Shakas too. I mean, I'm really hoping and praying that he's back, because that the win that they had over Lewis was absolutely incredible. And Shakas hit 737. I watched that match. He was just unstoppable. I mean, he was really, really great. He was great in every single match. So hoping and praying that he's okay and that he's back in the lineup this week.
Excellent.
Hey, Rob, I got to go, but I got to get my player of the week before I jump off here and get on a plane.
Well, we're going to go there anyways, Dan.
Chakas for sure is one, since Jay already got Henao. And then Varga from Long Beach. Those would be my two guys, for sure. But always great to see you guys. I'm sure I'll see you next week. And good luck on the weekend. So
safe travels, pilot man.
Safe travels.
Fly safe.
Get on that plane. No cocktails. Okay, Dan?
Okay.
All right. That goes to our players of the week. Jay's already got his, unless he's got additional ones. But we're going to go to someone else here so he doesn't steal another one. So let's go with Brad, who's Does he have
it
his?
Took my three. Come back to me.
I'm ready.
Okay.
I'll go Capone Brown, 26 kills, 388 in the defeat over Stanford. He's playing some great ball, has been all season. And then the other one is Ethan Champlin, 15 kills, hit 500 in the win over Penn State. And, you know, I think I said this a little bit ago, Ethan Champlin is a national championship outside. And, you know, I think UCLA originally tooled with him at libero. He can be a libero. He can be a great libero. But at the end of the day, he might be one of the best we've seen on the left. And, you know, obviously them putting him back out there, that looks like they're starting to find their rhythm. So yeah. Ethan Champlin, way to go.
I should put Ethan Champlin, keep him on the graphic because he's on it every week, but have a Libro jersey and a Railer jersey for him. So, all right, Brad.
I got Nathaniel Gates. I touched on him a little bit, but he's hitting above 500 from this weekend. Double-digit kills, got some stuff blocks as well. And then another one, we're going one old with the fifth-year senior, Nathaniel Gates, and then we're going young with the 17-year-old freshman, Tred Rosenthal. Yeah. And I thought it was interesting. And I don't have his assists or stats, but leading that team to be 3-0 on that weekend, and it's an impressive performance. You know, and I think as a freshman setter at, or a new setter at any program, any level, it's tough to lead against the competition that they had out at the outrigger. So seeing him be able to really just do what he's been doing, whether it be club with MB Surf or high school at MiraCosta, he's just been a rock star. So pretty impressive performance and showing by a young, promising setter.
Yeah, he had 41 assists, but they actually put Calling in for one set last night in the five setter, so his numbers could have been even higher. Let's go to Jay.
Heno.
I thought you had an additional.
The one, no, I do have an additional, but my main one is Heno. The guy is a one-man wrecking machine. And Hakas, I agree with Dan. Those are the two, in my eyes right now, the two leading candidates for player of the year nationally. It'll be interesting to see how Hakas repairs himself. I hope to God it's not a serious injury, but those two players are absolute dynamite, and they're fun to watch. They're fiery competitors. I think they're both pretty respectful of the people across the net and the people around them. So just love watching both of them play. They're a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, really good choices by everyone. Yeah, we are going to talk about chirping, but we're going to save that because we are 10 minutes later than we normally are. But on the chirping issue, I'll just add that when Luis Sakonoko was brought in and Heno, because they're national teammates, they were talking trash to each other in French. And it was hilarious because they were both smiling, but you could tell they were jabbering at each other. So, you know, a little friendly chirping's good there.
Yeah.
Let's go to our matches. What you watching for week 11? Craziness, huh? All right. Theo's waving the finger. He's like, he wants it. So it's passing his way.
Yeah. I mean, I think this is one that we're all going to at least want to say, because we look forward to it every year, Hawaii Long Beach. This is a match there's a lot of, if we talk about the rivalries of recent years, this is one of them. And these two teams are both obviously coming off of playing some really good ball. And I think that's going to be a really, really exciting matchup. Excited to see it. The other one that I'll throw out there that I think is going to be interesting is Lindenwood Ball State. Take a little different approach here. And you know, Lindenwood, obviously a really, really great team. I don't know that Ball State played this past week. So it'll be interesting to see what those two look like and you know, if Lindenwood's able to go out there and get an upset.
Yep. All right, let's go over to Brad.
Obviously Hawaii Long Beach will be really, really interesting, and seeing what both those teams look like against each other is always entertaining. And then for me, I got Lewis versus McKendree. I think Lewis coming off a really tough week, now having to travel today. That's going to be tricky to play McKendree on Thursday. That's a really quick turnaround with all that travel. So I think that's going to be a tough one for Dan to fight off and have to stay strong against McKendree, who I didn't see what they did last week, but overall has been playing some pretty good volleyball. And then I think the other Ball State match is Ohio State Ball State. And I think that one will be another good one. And just, I think continuing to figure out what the Miva is going to do and what that 1-2-3-4 looks like is going to keep being entertaining.
Yeah, great call to Ball State, because Ohio State with the two losses, their only two losses to Loyola, and a Ball State can separate themselves with a couple wins this week. Let's go to Jay.
Yeah, I agree. Ball State, Ohio State, that's number one versus number two in the MIVA. That's going to be hotly contested. I agree with the McKenzie Lewis. Coming back from Hawaii, and I think Dan, did he say he was on a red eye, or he flew overnight somewhere and had a connection, whatever the case is. That's not an easy trip to recover from when you come back east. So it'll be interesting to see if McKenzie can capitalize on that. And it's on a Thursday. It's one less day to recover. I will be watching Harvard versus UC San Diego. Harvard is a team that this year maybe kind of flew under the radar at the beginning of the season, but they've got some matches under their belt where I'm starting to see some of the glimpses of how good they could be. I'm going to see what they do there. I'm going to be watching Princeton Loyola. Princeton is a team that's got some weapons. Loyola is coming off a couple of matches that maybe they didn't perform their best, so I'm interested to see there. Obviously, Hawaii Long Beach. I hope Hawkins can play. I don't know how severe the injury is. It doesn't look good, but in either case, Theo's right. That's a rivalry in recent years that is a lot of fun to watch. But my match of the week. Sponsored by Samuel L. Jackson, Le Battle Royale with Cheese, Northridge, San Diego. That
CBW throwdown.
I cannot wait to see these two guys get at it. I want to see both of you pointing at each other at various times in a match. I want to see you come out in boxing shorts, coming out with the Everlast boxing gloves. It's going to be so much fun to watch. And it's Theo's first Big West match, which is going to be fun too. So those are my matches of the week that I will be paying attention to.
Yep. Excellent call. I was going to pick that one myself, the CBW throwdown. So, happening in a gym near in San Diego and in the San Fernando Valley. But I'll pick my Irvine Santa Barbara series just because I always enjoy seeing Santa Barbara. I know this is considered more of a rebuilding year, a new squad, but you know, Rick does with the guys he has. I mean, you can never count them out anything. And that's what I like about Santa Barbara. They're always in the fight. You can look at their record like, oh, this is a walkover match. It's never a walkover match for Santa Barbara. So, and that's what I respect most about it, because they're always competing. So, with that, that would conclude episode 11. Unless you guys have anything else you want to add. We had a topic. Oh, Jay.
I have one thing to add before you brought your topic up. Somebody out there, talk to your providers. Get behind the end line. Watch the game from the end line, not the 50-yard line. Secondly, we need 12 teams in the championships. You listen to UCLA, Grand Canyon, Long Beach, Hawaii, UC Irvine, Ohio State, Loyola, Ball State. Four of those teams are not going to be in the big dance. Let that sink in for a second. And last but not least, don't forget, Theo and I only want $5 per, but Volumetrics, Huddle, whatever you want, get on there. Remote announcers, I promise you, you'll get some money.
Well, I was just going to mention that we were going to talk about, are we loving the shove this week, but we're going to have to push out to next week because we're over an hour at this point. So that's Brad Rothschild of UC San Diego, Theo Edwards of CSUN, and Jay Hossack of George Mason. Appreciate your time this week and all your great nuggets of wisdom that we've heard this week. And good luck this week. We are not going to take sides in the UC San Diego CSUN showdown, but we'll be passing.
I will be. I'll be taking a side.
A battle royale with cheese.
There we go. I'll get that graphic up. The Royale with Cheese showdown. So, all right, gentlemen, best of luck this week.
Thanks, Rob.
See ya.
See
ya.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening to College Volleyball Weekly. Be sure to follow Rob Aspero at the Rob on the Mic on Instagram and at Rob on the Mic on Twitter.